Here we go, here we go, here we go. Mm. 1, 2, 1, 2, here we go. Any voice exercises that I can do with you right now?
Yeah, I think we should do that because I feel very mellow today. I just want to
be in bed. Okay.
Which is fine. We could start by doing some humming.
Okay.
So there's a thing that we used to do in school. It was as if your throat is like a house, and so there's like basement voice, and then there's like the chimney, and so we could start here in the heart one, and so by doing like doing a hmm sound, like so let's take a like a big breath, and then on the exhale we'll do the hmm and sort of feeling where your heart is right now. Ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Open up the front door, so we're gonna like move it up right here, and we're gonna start with but then we're gonna go to ma and do the big A sound. Yeah.
Kay.
Okay, so we'll take a big breath. Ma.
Welcome to What You Know About RJ, Restorative Justice, Sharing Stories and Skills, a podcast of the California Conference for Equality and Justice. I am your host, Dr. Jenny Escobar, Restorative Justice Trainer, and God, I always forget my title, Strategist and Coach. I am your host, Dr. Jenny Escobar, Restorative Justice Coach and Strategist for CCEJ. So in our last episode, we read the following teaser as an introduction for our next guest that we have today. For the first few episodes of our podcast, we're going to be introducing our team members one at a time because we are fabulous. And just so that, you know, you all get to know a little bit about who we are and why do we do the work that we do every day in restorative justice. And for today, just to give you a refresher, if you missed out on last episode, here's the teaser for our guest today. They stare down at each other from across the space. The rest laugh. He plants his feet on the floor to run when he needs to. He says, "Show me how many times you can do this without laughing." So today we have the pleasure and the honor to be spotlighting our team member, Gilbert Salazar. So Gilbert, I'm so excited to be interviewing you today. I've been waiting for this moment. You've been interviewing us. You've been coordinating all logistics to get this done. But first, let me ask you, what are you doing in this description that I just read?
What's up, Janie? It's good to be here with you today. I'm excited to sit down with you. So in that description, that's when I was an RJ coordinator a few years ago, and it was super early on when circles in my life were very, very new, and was common but not always common, but could have been very common, was a fight. And so, you know, this was a school that, this was back at when most schools didn't know what restorative justice was or was going to be or was supposed to be or what community building circle was supposed to be. And so there was no front loading, so teachers, students didn't know what we were going to be doing. So I was all from scratch. And so it was a particular heated moment. Mm-hmm. It was like 30 students in the class. No, it was not in the class because I didn't have a classroom that first semester. It was in the cafeteria. And two students were, you know, they were mad-dogging each other. And I kept watching them and kept watching them, and everybody else was laughing, and, you know, like, the temperature was boiling, so I was like, I have to be, like, what am I going to do, what am I going to do? And then in an effort to diffuse the situation, I remembered a game that I played when I was in AmeriCorps, where you had to say, you had to count ha's, like ha-ha-ha, in a certain number, and then the person next to you had to add one more ha. And it was really funny and really hard to do. So in that moment of conflict, I was like, well, let me just bust this out. And it saved the circle, it saved the whole process, and it became like the go-to game for all of us that is now part of our work.
Yes.
Too. So yeah. So
thank you for sharing. I love the origin story of HaHa. Because if you've taken a training with us, or if you know anything about our work, you know HaHa has been part of our CCJ culture and how we break the ice and getting more in touch with ourselves. So tell us a little bit more about you. What do you do here? And what is the story of your name? Where does your name come from?
Okay, so I'm an RJ coach and strategist here at CCJ. And what I do is very similar to Jenny. So I work with schools and with teachers and principals to help them with their implementation of this work. So I do a lot of unpacking, a lot of like chipping away at old paradigms. And so with that, with a lot of trainings, a lot of conversations, a lot of meetings, a lot of like thinking of what new activity or new question to bust out to get adults to think about their younger selves. That's what I do. And then also the other part of the work is doing things like this. And so coordinating interviews and curriculums and new activities and new materials and so things like that. And so that's also really creative too. My name, Gilbert Salazar, no middle name. My mom did not believe in middle names. Nobody in my family on her side had a middle name. And I'm named after my dad, so I'm a junior. Like every oldest child in all of my, every older cousin in all of my family. Growing up, I didn't like my name. In like middle school, sixth grade, What's Eating Gilbert Grape came out, like that movie. Mm-hmm. And so I got made fun of a lot. So I didn't like my name. I also had I did not have a positive relationship with my father. And so it was really hard as I got older to carry his name. And so it wasn't until I got older that, and I became my own person and my own man, that I claimed the name is different. And so that was really powerful. But yeah, Gilbert Salazar has that.
That's right.
That's me.
That is you.
All over, every day.
Thank you for sharing that. I feel like you're somebody for me who, when I come into the office every day and, you know, we share a space together, you represent to me a light, a little sunshine in my day. You know, we all know, everybody knows here that you're my work hubby. One of the things that I think that you bring so powerfully to our team is this idea about being in the moment, being present, and trusting our gut around our creativity. So you have been a big teacher for me around that. And like we heard earlier in the example that you gave about, oh my God, there's gonna be this fight that's gonna happen. I can't really even think of anybody else who would think that playing haha will be the thing, the strategy to use at that moment in time to de-escalate, but also to bring folks back into alignment with their joy and with their laughter. And so I wanted to ask you a little bit more about that. Like, tell us a little bit about, like, when is the earliest memory you have around your creativity, of being this creative being? Like, what comes to mind as sort of your earliest memory?
I'm gonna lean in on what you talked about in your episode, which was around intuition. And when I was in grad school and we were doing a lot of image theater, our professor would say, when we had to come up with the image on the spot of something, he would always say, the first image is always right. Mm. And so the first image in my head around that question is this little, I used to love books and I still do, and my mom would know how many books you were able to take out of the library, like what the max was. And so my sister and I would go to the library in Santa Ana downtown, and I think it was like 24 if you were little. And so we would get 24 books, and we would walk out with like all these stacks. And when you asked that question, I remember this like little book that I had, and it was of a little panda, and the panda painted, and there was all these like paintbrushes. And at the end, when this little panda's painting, the little panda's trying to figure out how to get rid of the paint. And so he puts the paint down in the sink, and it creates this big, huge swirl. And so, and I remember that book. It's like a little book with a little panda. And I remember that page all when all the paints came together in this like swirl down the sink. I recently found that book in my mom's house, and I took it, and like half of the book was torn. I don't know why. It wasn't me, because you don't do that to books. But I think that I was fascinated about this idea that there's different paints and what it looks like when all the paints come together. And so I think about that, and then I think about, again, when I was in grad school, I have a master's in applied theater arts, and so the program was about learning how to use theater as a tool for education, a tool for facilitation, a tool for communities who are not necessarily actors or think of themselves as artists, but how to use theater as a means for political education, for activism. And we in our directing class, we had to do a scene of like essentially, I don't know if it was about this, but I did a scene around a rupture, like an intense emotional moment in my life. And so my brother from another mother, Kieran, was directing, and so we came up with this scene where there was a conflict between my abuela, my grandmother, and my mother, and it was like deep and it was like intense, and it made me, what came up in the scene was like me being like a little kid watering plants, right? And in rehearsal, in the moment, what came up was picking up a knife. And so we went through that scene. And then with just more of this like emotional work, Kieran was like, what else is in your hand? And what I felt was a paintbrush. And so in the working with him, I saw myself in the middle of a river holding a paintbrush, and all these paints were like mixing together. And so I think, in terms of creativity in early moments and how they continue, just being open to intuition and to whatever the image is. And I think as I get older, it's not just seeing images, but like being in the image itself, if that makes sense. And so, yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
I love like the imagery of again, flow. A flow of water, a flow of colors. And I, you know, really want to, let me get this question straight. So I really would love to hear more about how you bring both that creativity that was emerging out of you when you were little to, you mentioned sort of your graduate program and all the work that you did there. How do you bring all these skills? First of all, like, why did you decide to merge these two worlds together, of restorative justice and the theater world? What led you to want to bring those two things together?
So for me, it's about voice. And, you know, going back to what I shared earlier, like the knife was in a very young self, was a literal knife. When there was a year in seventh grade when I had lost my voice, and I couldn't speak, and so, and nobody could figure out what it was, and so it ended up being a cyst in my throat. It had to be removed, but it had been growing, so it had caused a gap in the vocal cords. And so being in seventh grade and not being able to speak was all kinds of painful. And so for me, art and theater creativity is about voice, and all, never forgetting what it felt like to literally not have a voice. And then even the moments, even like yesterday, we had an experience where I had lost my voice for a moment. Whether it's symbolically lost my voice or whether it's literally. So I think in what we do in Circle, in this work, it's about people opening up and owning their own voices and their own stories and their own narratives. And there's different ways that you could give your story. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be opening up your throat and speaking it. There's all kinds of ways to give story. And Circle had been so much about voice and so much about, like, here's a talking piece. Tell me what's your favorite ice cream. Like, name that, describe that. And not everybody is down or ready to open up the throat chakra and let themselves be vulnerable in that way. Mm-hmm. And so I love a challenge. And so earlier, I was like, what is it that I can do? I know what it's like to feel the armor, to feel the mask, to want to be safe and protected, to not feel right, not feel comfortable, to feel like you're being not witnessed or you're being too witnessed and too vulnerable. And so in that moment, I thought of play. Mm. And the power of play, and how the power of play can ease the mask away, ease the armor, all through invitation. And so this is like, I'm going to invite us to play this. It's not a demand. It's not like a directive. And so how people of students and adults have come into the act of play and creativity. And then there would always be a big difference from, you know, like in the beginning, I would ask all these questions, 4 or 5 questions, like 2 students would speak, the whole class would pass. And the same with adults too. And so there was a big change after a game, after like 3 rounds of haha, they got to like 30 kids, they got to 5 ha-has without laughing. And then I would go into a question like, just, you know, what's your favorite ice cream? And almost nobody would pass and everybody would want to speak. And so it's just the power of game and play. And so I connected to that because I saw myself in those circles. Yeah. And this time I was using my literal voice to open up the space. And so I think, you know, for me, it's been about voice and expression. Mm. And how a game can open that up for people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what is, what's one memorable moment that you can think of in the work that you do as a restorative justice coach and strategist, where you've seen play be a transformative element in the work that you were doing with folks?
When I was an ARCHER coordinator, I got asked to facilitate an affective statement workshop. And this was early on, before we had our restorative dialogue curriculum and training. And I was at this like huge school that has like multiple schools inside of it. And it was the first time that these adults had an affective statement training. And so I, you know, gave the prompt, I role play, I teachers role play, and a teacher that it was, this is why we have on our handout, the student Monica in that scenario. And so we were playing the student that they had named Monica, and she was on her cell phone. And the teacher was trying on the skill, and it was, you know, it was good, it was solid. And a teacher said, who had been watching, he had said, that would never work. Like, why, you expect me in that moment to say, when I saw you on your cell phone, I feel frustrated, like that would never work. So it was a moment when, and again, like I love a good challenge. And so I felt myself activated, but I wanted to, I guess, kind of like the paints in the sink of just like, what does it look like if they all mix together? So I just bounced the question back and said, okay, so tell me, what would you have said? And actually, can you get up, instead of tell us, can you get up and show us? And so the teacher that was playing Monica stayed in the chair, and I was like, you know, can you get up and show us? And so he did, and he got up, and he was like, Monica, like, get off your cell phone. And the teacher who was playing Monica got in it, and she was like, no. And so then they went into this back and forth. And then all I kept doing, and I just relied on my training from Theater of the Oppressed and from Applied Theater, of continuing asking the question, and then what would happen? And so other teachers in the circle said, okay, well, now the campus security would be called in. So I was, okay, who can play campus security? Somebody stepped up and walked in the classroom. Hey, what's going on here? Oh, she's on her cell phone. So we played the whole scene, and all I kept doing was, and tell me what might happen then. So we played it out. And it ended up Monica didn't go to class for like a month or so.
Hmm.
And so I just, you know, I had nothing planned. And then another teacher who had been watching the whole time said, you know what, Gilbert, I was looking at the time, and that took longer than the role play where you did the affective statement. And so, and I was like, oh. And so it was this moment where everybody, including me, was like, just this thing about time. And that it took longer in this real life choice making of what they would do, of what that teacher would do with Monica. And so it was just this beautiful moment. I felt so proud of myself because I relied on my theater training of just asking the question of like, what do you think would happen? And
yeah.
So it was powerful. It was transformative without me having to validate the work or repeat it or give a lecture. It was just like, show me what you got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know, one of the things that I feel like I've learned from you a lot is what is the right question that I can ask at that moment to allow people to come to their own understanding about what we are offering as a practice. And, you know, in that scenario, it was not shying away from the challenge of that's never going to work. Well, let's try it out and see how that feels. And so I want to maybe connect you back a little bit too with this thing you keep mentioning is, and nothing was planned. You know, you keep coming back to, and then in that moment, I da-da-da-da-da. So one of the things that we struggle with sometimes, we and then also everybody who's trying on the practices of restorative justice, is that we just want a script, or we want, like, just give me the five things that I need to do when that happens, right? And a lot of the times that we our answers are often, it depends. You know, our director, Belia, always has hashtag, it depends. And or we have questions back to them for them to think through that. And I think a lot of people assume that sometimes they're like, they get a little annoyed with us. They're like, well, you have the answer, just tell me.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, we're not trying to like delay any information from you. It's just literally, this is the process that we go through when we're having to figure out things that are not planned. So can you speak more about what do you do when things don't go as planned? Like, how do you get yourself to that place? Like, if somebody's listening and they're like, okay, I want to try to be more, you know, in the moment, what is it that you do?
I take a breath, first of all. And then there's two words that come to mind. One is surrender and the other is vulnerability.
Hmm.
And those are two really hard things for grown folks to do. To surrender and to be vulnerable. And so I think of just this me being grounded in, I don't know what's gonna happen. I don't know. And once I know there's been moments in my life when I try and latch on to, let me understand, let me try and know what to do. But it's been those moments where I'm so stuck and frozen. And so, but the moments, in speaking of facilitation, where I'm just like, I don't know, and I just like, there's this release, very much a lot like I think what Belly, our director, and our friend talks about with the expansion and contraction.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it's this thought of like, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
followed by, and that's okay, followed by, there's wisdom in the room, followed by, I don't have to know, and that somebody else knows and has the answer. And so I think just those four things, and I'm glad that we captured this because I probably might forget the order tomorrow. That's been the way that I've been able to capture people's creativity and my own in those four parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I think we need a poster or a handout or something visual to remind ourselves of those steps, right? And I know it looks different for everybody, mm-hmm. but definitely I have felt sort of your guidance and your mentorship around letting go and surrendering to be very, very helpful to get to where I am today around this work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard, like you say, to be vulnerable and to, especially for folks that are in education, who are being trained to be experts, you know, quote unquote experts of everything. And then we have the adult side of things, right? Of like, I'm an adult, I know better type of understanding of self in those situations. So mm-hmm. I love it. Thank you for bringing that very concrete tool for us to be able to reflect on as we engage in this work. I want to ask you a little bit more about what is something that doing the work of restorative justice, bringing in theater, play, curiosity, what has that taught you in your own life outside of the CCJ world, the RJ world?
Say it again, Jenny.
So what is something that restorative justice, the connection of restorative justice, theater, and curiosity and play have taught you in your own life?
Yeah, so the first thing that comes to mind is how scary it is to be vulnerable and to give story, and how doing this work has helped me to give my own stories. And to stand in that power, and to be able to look behind. And so early on, I used to say things like in a training, when, you know, I had the paper and what questions to ask, but in that moment, like, there needed to be a different question. And so what I would say, I would say something like, you know what, the RJ guides are telling me this. And so, and then I think around the time that you started, and that I was, I think, taking more ownership of, like, the role play in restorative dialogue, or I think when I was maybe beginning to create more things for our work in collaboration, I noticed myself not saying the RJ gods, but saying, like, my ancestors or my spirits are telling me. And so this recognition, this, like, deep, deep recognition that this, it was not this... I wasn't just dropped on this earth without anything else to do this work, but there was, like, whole histories behind me. And mm-hmm. so, and when I turned, I think I was, like, my birthday 3 years ago, and I went to Arizona, and I went to my great-grandfather's ancestral land, and I really came back from that trip. I think that was when I no longer, it did not feel right to say the RJ gods have told me. It felt right to say what I'm being told is this question. And so I learned, I think I was always good at taking a pause, but I learned to, like, really sit in the pause. And I remember when you and I were at one of our school sites in Watts High School, and we were training students. I think for the first time you and I were training students. And it was like 2 days, and it was May, and they were, like, mostly seniors, and it was not the best schedule. Take a note, y'all, not the best schedule to train students, seniors, in May, at the end of the school year. And it was on our, I think on the first day, and we were going to show them the full flow, like a full-on circle. And I forget what the question was, and I think that was maybe the day that we had a remix and do a lot of different things, you and I, and it was, like, a big group, and we had three really strong teachers that are really strong advocates and supporters and creators in this work too. And I had this obsidian ball that I got from, I think, Mexico, I think from the month before, the year before, that summer. And there was just this, like, I looked over at you, and also just in terms of partnership and creative collaborative partnership, I looked over at you, and just without saying, I was like, I'm gonna change this question. And you looked at me and you were like, yes, without having to say anything. And what came up in that moment was, remember the question that I said? It was like, what is something that you wish that you could do?
Yeah.
Like, what's a skill or talent that you wish that you had? And then it became this, like, beautiful circle mm-hmm. of, like, all these different responses. And I kept from that, it was something like, if you had this skill or talent, what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one was like, how would it change your life? And then the fourth one was like the juicy, juicy one. And the fourth question was, it was like, so it's been 2 weeks and you've had the thing. You've done the thing that you've said you wanted to do. What have you been doing with it? I've done those questions with adults and with students, and it's always such a beautiful, beautiful circle where people get to, in their brains, be in a whole different world that they want to create, and their bodies change, and they talk about, you know, the person that said, I want to sing, is now saying, oh, for the last 2 weeks, like, I joined a salsa band or a mariachi band, or I've been singing with my kids on American Idol, and so all of these, like, possibilities. So going back to your question, I think that it's not coincidence that during the time that I've been doing this work is also the time that I've been presenting my writing as a playwright, and it's been produced, and I've been having to sit and witness the characters that I've received and crafted in the story, that I've been able to witness that and witness people watching those stories. And so because I, just like so many people, when they have those four questions and all the questions that we give, they've seen the possibility of their life expanded, mm-hmm. and it's been more abundant from our work in Circle. And the impact of me has been that I've been able to see the possibility of my own creative life in a much bigger way. So that's really expanded. So, yeah, it's been a powerful journey for everybody in Circle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely witnessed that. And even, I have to tell you, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I went out and bought myself a ukulele and started to teach myself because of facilitating those Circle rounds so many times. So when it came to me, I would always say, I want to learn how to play the ukulele, and like 2 weeks have gone by, and I'm like, I'm living in some island, I'm a famous ukulele player, and like blah, 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 right? And then after like the fifth time facilitating those questions, I was like, girl, go get yourself, go do that. It's not that, you know, far out for you to be able to see what that looks like for yourself. So thank you for that gift.
And I sang to a plant, these plants that I made medicine, and it's become a very strong medicine for people. So, you know, because my thing was to sing.
Yeah. I mean, these things like trickle down into our everyday life if we let them to.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of close us out in terms of this conversation, because we are definitely going to play next.
Okay.
Because, you know, obviously, out of all of us, you're the one who we need to play with the most, because you have challenged us to that as well. But before we do that, is there any, like, advice, any last advice, anything that you want to tell folks who are either beginning doing this work or have been doing this work and are looking for something to inspire them to be more creative, to be more curious, to be more in the moment? Is there anything you want to say to folks before we close this out?
What I would want to say to folks is and everything that you think you know, just to drop and release that. Because I think once we become too knowing or too expertizing, it can be very limiting. It can be very powerful. And there's a lot of journeys that people have had to become, you know, knowledgeable in work and fields, yes. But what I want to say for people who are trying this work on, or people who have been doing this work, is to continue to have this idea that there's more to learn, and that there's more to experience. And I think that will help to carry in creativity and curiosity. Yeah.
Thank you.
Be curious.
Yes, be curious, everybody. Easier said than done, but...
Yes. Yeah.
One step at a time. Thank you, Gilbert. All right, Gilbert. So we have come to the part that I think was created for you and for this moment.
Mm.
We cannot end an episode with Gilbert Salazar without having some games or play involving it. So I'm so excited to bring in this game. And it's, of course, a remix of a game that you have given us and gifted us in this work. Because I feel like you are always reminding us of the possibilities that exist with what is.
Mm.
And through the remixes and through all the fun things that we've been able to create together and with your leadership, I want to take I just want to play with you.
Yeah, let's play.
Let's play.
I'm ready.
So this game is called Big Circle.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, Big Circle. Yeah. So we're going to do a remix of Big Circle for the radio, because I'm old school like that, and this is the radio. And the way we're going to play this is that I'm going to give us a theme, and we're both going to have a chance to say the first two things that come to our mind, based on this theme. If by any chance one of us takes a little too long or we lose our rhythm while we're speaking our curiosity out loud, then we're going to have to mush it down, mush it up, radio style, with big circle. Does this make sense?
It does to me. Should we tell people what the rhythm is of big circle?
Yeah, like we're about to do this okay. Right now. So you join me, Gilbert. Let's let people know what we mean when we say big circle.
We are so excited. Our audio levels are so high right now.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Oh, we might have to do it. Well, you know, that's it. We got to make sure everybody can hear us loud and clear because this is the best part. Okay, ready? And if either of us take a little too long or we get out of this rhythm, we're going to have to move on to the next theme or do it again.
Sure.
Yeah?
And then are we doing big circle three times?
And we're doing big circle three times. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Big circle. One more. Big circle. So if one of us messes up on the rhythm, then we both have to say big circle like that?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. We all join in. But then only the one that messed up gets to mush it down on their seat while singing that song.
And if you want to know what mush it down means, please take our intro to games open games training.
Yeah, this is why I use the mastermind. This is why. Always on the game. All right, Gilbert, are you ready to play?
I'm ready.
Okay. So we always going to start off right. And our first theme is creativity.
The things that come up for us. For me.
Yeah, we're both going to do it.
Oh, okay.
So, but if you can start us off with, what are two things that come up for you when I say creativity?
In the rhythm. Podcasting. And writing.
Hey, okay. I'm gonna say sexy moves and creativity.
Cooking and painting.
Yay. I'm gonna say walking in the woods and looking at nature makes me creative.
Looking at the sky and wearing bright colors.
Yes, thank you for colors. I just saw a bunch of bright colors on the wall. Contrasting colors make me really creative as well. Are you ready for the next one?
Yes.
Okay. The next theme is going to be plantitas, plants.
Okay.
Nature.
Let's do this one faster, no?
Yeah, I think so.
Me or you?
If you're ready.
I'm ready.
Whoever's ready, go.
Sunflowers, yellow roses.
Green, blue, yellow, black.
Flowers?
Yeah.
Yellow, black?
Yeah.
Like the names of flowers?
Like the sunflowers.
Oh, specific. Okay, I got you.
Don't doubt my answers.
Hydrangeas? Big circle.
Everybody, Gilbert just mooshed it down.
I mooshed it down because I was
you
threw me off with the specific colors of sunflowers.
That's okay. We got another one for
okay,
you.
Okay, pues, I'm ready.
Five themes. We're just warming up here,
okay.
Gilbertino. Don't worry about this. You'll catch up again. Next theme is going to be water.
Waterfall. Raindrop.
I'm going to say the river's current. And I'm going to say the rain that we never get here in LA.
Snowflake and steam.
Being wet outside, drenched after big rain, and the smell of dirt after it rains that I want to eat.
Constellation,
yeah.
And fog.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing.
Flow, water flow, and water as strength.
Water in a cup and sweat.
Ooh, I'm going to say that word that we love in this office, moist. And I don't know.
Big circle.
It's getting hot in here. Jesus. Okay. Next theme is going to be steam.
Oh, that's the whole topic.
That's the whole topic, steam.
Okay.
What Gilbert brings to his facilitation style, steam.
Okay, I got it. I'm getting that rhythm in my head. Activation. Challenging.
Oh. Balance between fire and water. And sauna. Ooh.
Healing. Medicine.
Ooh. Eucalyptus.
Big circle.
What happens? My mind just goes places.
Bring it back. This is not the explicit on this podcast here.
We are going to end with one of our favorite topics, love.
Aww.
We will always come back to love. So that is our last theme, love.
Okay. I'm ready.
When you're ready,
Chime us in with this one. Abuelita. And breath.
Birds and the sun.
Freedom. Community.
Possibilities and ancestors.
Voice. And prayer.
Bodies and soul.
Nature. And flight.
Divinity and partnership.
Open heart. Vulnerability.
Healing and worth.
Risk taking, exposure.
Yes, I love that.
And that's beautiful.
I think that with that we can end.
I felt super grounded on that one. I felt a little nervous in the other ones, but that one I felt very, very grounded.
Yeah, I mean that makes sense. I feel like you do a lot of things from your heart, and you bring a lot of intention and love into what you do. And I think the day that you don't love this, you won't do it anymore.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't see that. I see you being driven by love. So thank you for bringing that into my life and into this work. And I think that that's one of the things that you give people, is that you got to really ground yourself in love when doing this work, and everything else will follow.
Thank you. You know, it's been self-love has been a journey for me.
Yeah.
Many, many years in the making. And so, yeah. And so, I feel like I have a deeper relationship with my younger self in doing this work. And so, I feel like when he's with me, I feel much more grounded. Yeah.
Well, thank you, little Gilbert. Thank you, big Gilbert. Thank you to Elder Gilbert.
No.
Thank you to all the parts of you that make us be the receivers of so much medicine and creativity that you bring. So grateful.
Thank you.
And I'm so happy to have had spent this time with you, to have the world and everyone hear how wonderful you are, like all the things that you bring. I get to witness you every day. I feel really honored. And no matter what our paths go, I feel like this has been such a gift to work with someone like you. You're such a teacher to me. And thank you for that.
Thank you, Jenny.
And I'm so excited for everybody else to get a little glimpse of that, and to see you outside of just facilitating something or coaching something, but like to really get to know the fullness of you through this podcast, and to know that you are magical and that you are
already taking flight in all the ways, both within CCEJ and outside of it, in the work that you do. Can you tell people a little bit about the work that you do outside of CCEJ? So they could get a sense of like your width and all the things that you bring.
Sure. So I'm also a playwright and a writer. And so I've written two full-length plays dealing with the violence of masculinity, with healing, with nature, wisdom and beliefs of the earth. And so I've gone through workshops, but not a full production, like a full witnessing with like more people. And all of that in this life, in this world means, you know, like budget and money and location and place and like honoring people's work and labor. And so that's sort of my journey outside of this office space and the container of our work, which is still included in the, yeah, in the plays and in the work. And so that's sort of, I think there's a lot of self-love work that I'm doing in around my own worth and allowing people to be witnesses of that. And I think that's, those are the two things that I'm working through that are sort of stuck places in order for me to really enter into a space and say, my work is worthy of this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let me find the funds needed, the resources needed to be able to do, to show these stories in a theater.
Yeah.
Or on a screen, you know? Yeah. Also, like, you know, screenplay.
Possibilities are endless.
Yeah. And so there's this thing of, like, trust in journey and time. Mm-hmm. And also activating myself to make specific choices. So it's, like, about, like, holding both of those.
Yeah.
It's the complexity, I think, of being an adult or, you know?
It is. But it's a necessary one. And I don't think everyone has the courage to take that on. And I do want to say also that you are really a beautiful medicine person who has done medicine with plants and has done medicine with your words, medicine with your work. I mean, I've been honored to see your plays and to see your writing come to life, and I experienced that, especially having a male-identified person do that work. As a woman of color, I feel really... like you've been a partner in my own healing around toxic masculinity and believing that, cisgender men don't always come with violence or don't always come with hurt. And I think you and Taharka and Pierre have been a blessing for me to witness in all the ways that you grapple with worth and vulnerability and all the things that you named. And so... it's so needed, and I hope that this can also be a manifestation of, yes, you're looking for it, but also people's, when they hear this, and if it touches their heart, to reach out, because this work is so much about doing it in community as well. It's not just on you to make that happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you for all that you do and all, like, all the other things we haven't said or that I actually don't know about that you do to make you who you are today. I'm so, so happy.
Thank you, Janie. Thank you for the gift of the gift of the opportunity for people, for that question, for people to witness the thing that I'm, the things that I'm also trying to work on. You know, and the challenge of being on this end, of being interviewed, or the challenge of, like, being a participant and not being the trainer, the challenge of, like, not being up in the front, but being, like, you know, having to step back and receive and witness and listen. Like, those are roles that I'm trying to work on to be okay with. And so to be grounded in just receiving people's blessings, people's witnessing of me, you know, that's another... In terms of steam and activation and feeling uncomfortable, like that's something that I need to be okay and be grounded in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think taking it back to circle, you know, you have sometimes 30-something students or people looking at you, and you get to answer. And so in all these years, I've realized that I still, in many ways, like, look down or look around and not look at people when I'm responding to even the story of my name, which is one of the questions that we ask in circle. And so it's really fascinating how in our work it's this continued lesson of this is still the work that you need to do.
Yeah.
And so of having people receive you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's so, we're so worthy of that
mm-hmm.
witnessing. And I think, like, the systems that we're under, and also our trauma or whatever the experiences that told us that we're not.
Mm-hmm.
We're just kind of like, you know, I think RJ, it's a way to undo some of those things, or like at least support us in that journey of coming back to ourselves. And I'm so happy that you're sharing this conversation around worthiness
mm-hmm.
and like being seen, because I do think, like, you know, it is one of our beliefs around everyone deserves to be seen, heard, and understood. But it's so hard, you know, it's so hard when we don't even know how to do that for ourselves,
yeah.
you know, to start.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can happen simultaneously, right? Like, this work forces us to both see and understand others while we're trying to figure out how to do that for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we don't have time to lose. We have to be able to do that. And I feel like I feel very seen by you. I feel very understood by you. Even in times when I feel like we're both not, like, understanding each other,
mm-hmm.
I feel very hurt and seen by you. I don't think that you've ever, I don't think I've ever felt like you put my worth to question.
Mm.
Even in our disagreements, or even in ways that we're like, wait, what? And I think that because I know that you can do that for me, I feel like you definitely are doing that for yourself, I hope. And, you have the capacity, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm.
And I'm able to see that and receive that from you.
Mm.
And I hope that I get to do that for you, and that the world gets to do that for you and affirm you in your worth.
Mm.
In all the ways that is. Just for being alive. Just for taking that breath. You don't have to do anything else.
Okay, Gilbert, at this time, I want to pass the mic to you so that you can give us your offering for the day.
Thank you. I was thinking about... I knew that we were going to talk about curiosity today. And so I was thinking about what makes me curious, or what I'm curious about. And then I was thinking about in Pierre Davis's episode, a colleague from Pierre, about his 60 seconds of gratitude. And so I think what I'm going to do is 60 seconds of stream of conscious curiosity. And so the thing in like a minute, the things that I'm curious about. And so I'm going to turn to our engineer, Mr. Pierre Davis, who's also in studio, just to do the time check for the minute. And whenever he says go, I'm going to just list off the things in my life that I'm curious
yes.
right now. What will they be? I don't know.
That's right.
Unrated.
Get ready, everybody.
Get ready. What I'm curious about lately, I've been curious about fermented foods. Lately, and microbes and bacteria and bread. I'm gonna be making some bread soon. I'm curious about the color blue. I was reading this book about the field guide to getting lost, I think, and she's describing how the color blue is when light is like not fully dispersed or when it's lost, and so the sky and the water. So I'm curious about blue. I'm curious about the dude who used to work down the hallway, who I call El Chulo. Now he's on the fifth floor. He's been kind of dressing like a Friday on a Monday, which was not his style, so I'm curious about what he's doing. I'm curious about when the next time I'm going to have some really good mango in Chile. And I'm going to Phoenix soon, actually, so that was when I had the best mango in my life on a dude on the bike with the mango, and he cut up like a flower, and it was beautiful. And I'm curious about, the last thing that I'm curious about is, I'm curious about orange chonies.
That is a perfect way to end this segment.
As you know, we've been closing this first episode with a teaser introducing our next RJ in Schools team member. Here's a teaser for the next episode. The sound of music fills the room. People lip sync to the song. He fidgets with papers in hands. He thinks, you're about to kill this, but how do you get done by 4? What do you think this action is? Find out in our next episode. This has been What You Know About RJ, Restorative Justice, Sharing Stories and Skills, a podcast from the California Conference for Equality and Justice, Restorative Justice in Schools. please visit our website at cacej.org for our latest trainings and materials. I'm your host, Jenny Escobar, and our guest, our one and only, has been Gilbert Salazar.
Yeah, that's me.
Hey there, podcast listeners. I'm Jesse Needham, and here at CCEJ, my role is to make sure that we have the resources we need to do our work. This podcast was an offering of love from us to you. Are you curious to know more about restorative justice? If you enjoy listening and want CCEJ to produce more podcasts, we invite you to show gratitude by making a donation at our website, www.cacej.org/donate. And don't forget to like, subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. Your support will give us the resources we need to produce more restorative justice learning tools. Thank you.